Welcome back to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City and KTAL LP 101.5 FM in Las Cruces. I'm your host for today's show, Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Kevin Bixby, the founder and executive director of the Southwest Environmental Center. And Kevin and his group recently launched a campaign called Wildlife for All. Kevin, I wanted to go back to something we talked about briefly earlier in the show about hunters and the fees that they pay in licenses. So, I mean, don't hunters so-called pay for conservation and therefore deserve a greater say in wildlife decisions?
Well, I'm asked this a lot, actually. And I'm going to say no on both counts. No, they don't pay for conservation, and no, they don't deserve a greater say, even if they did pay for conservation. So to answer the first part, do they pay? Traditionally, historically, hunters have funded state wildlife agencies, which were established to originally to enforce game laws, which was conservation. It was a restriction on the take of wild animals, which was very much needed. It wasn't comprehensively implemented. It wasn't for every species. It was for game species. But nonetheless, it was a form of conservation. And they did that through, hunters did that through buying their hunting licenses. And later, there was a federal law passed, Pittman-Robertson, and then after that, another federal law, Dingell-Johnson, which taxed certain items, some of which were used in hunting and fishing. And that money was given as federal grants to the states for wildlife related projects. So we have to unpack this a little bit. You know, there's lots of people do conservation in the United States, including the federal government, which manages about 600 million acres of public lands. And by providing those public lands, that's probably one of the most important conservation measures that is undertaken in the United States. And that's funded by U.S. taxpayers. So, and of which only 4% are hunters and 16% are fish anglers. So the vast majority of that comes from non-hunters or anglers. Okay, but if you're just talking about where does the money come from for state wildlife agencies, then you have to look at what is it that the agencies are doing. It's true that across all 50 states that wildlife agencies get about a third of their revenues from the sale of hunting and fishing licenses. And that varies by state. And again, in places like New Mexico, it's 60%. So that could be a significant portion of the agency's budget. But then those other federal grants, actually, the biggest one is Pittman-Robertson. It's a tax on the sale of guns and ammunition. And most guns in this country are not sold for hunting. They're sold for other purposes. So it's not true. It's often, you know, hunters are credited with that money, but it's not the case that it's mostly coming from hunters. Same with Dingell-Johnson funds, some of which are on the sale, taxes on the sale of gasoline for lawnmowers and snowblowers and things like that, which have nothing to do with hunting, right? So, but when you add all those sources of funding up, hunters and anglers contribute about 52%, about half of state wildlife agency revenues on average. So about half. So that's significant. But now we have to look more closely at what those agencies are doing with that money. And a good part of what they do, it's hard to argue it's conservation. It's, you know, selling fishing licenses. It's selling hunting licenses. It's managing all the hunting and fishing activities, which in and of themselves are not conservation. A lot of what agencies do really is antithetical to what we would call, most people would call conservation. And I'll give you one example. Fisheries. Many states operate fish hatcheries. And they raise a lot of fish, and then they stock their rivers and lakes with these fish, which people like to then fish for. Okay. In New Mexico, the New Mexico Game and Fish Department operates, like about 7 hatcheries, and it produces roughly on the order of 12 to 14 million non-native predatory fishes, like walleye and rainbow trout, neither of which are native to New Mexico. They raise this huge quantity of these non-native fishes and then release them into New Mexico's waters every year. On average, those fish last 2 weeks in the wild. Those studies have shown this. But they're being raised and released to provide or satisfy anglers, really, you know, to increase fishing success and sell fishing licenses, which then goes to support the operation of these hatcheries and, you know, the annual stocking programs. It just goes on and on. It's agriculture on an industrial scale. That is, it's a government monopoly of our waterways because you can't fish for without getting a license.
Right.
So you have to buy into the system if you want to fish. And by the way, those non-native fishes are often, they prey on our native fishes. Brown trout are notorious predators. They will eat other native fishes. They compete with our native fishes. And sometimes they hybridize with our native fishes. One of the reasons why we no longer, cutthroats and our native cutthroat trout, our native Gila trout are in such bad shape, so endangered, is because they've hybridized with rainbows. Now, the game department no longer releases fertile rainbows. They're sterile, supposedly. But nonetheless, they're still competing with the natives. So in no way can that be described as conservation. This is simply a money-making operation. And, you know, to say that hunters are paying for that, well, you know, fishermen are, anglers are, through their purchase of fishing licenses. But it's not conservation.
Right. It sure doesn't sound like it. And especially if these fish are predatory. I mean, we have, you know, here in the Gila, we have spike dace and loach minnow that are endangered. And I mean, I don't know if those, if the predatory fish are contributing to their endangerment, but, you know, if they're in the same places. But it sounds like, yes, it sounds like a circular system, you know, like job security. They're just like kind of reinforcing each other constantly.
And by the way, Donna, there is a proposal that the Game and Fish Department has made to raise and stock hybrid striped bass.
Huh. Just totally, what we need.
Totally not native to New Mexico.
Wow.
And God knows what effects these fish will have on the ecosystem.
No kidding. Well, Kevin, we only have a few minutes left in the show, and I wanted to make sure to ask you, how can people learn more about Wildlife for All, and how can they support you in your efforts? This is an important thing.
Well, they can check out our website. It's Wildlife for All. All one word, .us, wildlifeforall.us. There's a lot of information there on the topics we've been discussing today. We've got Mythbusters resources. We've got some webinars. And people can donate to the organization, become members. That's important for us as a source of income. We do not currently get grant foundation funding. We have been unsuccessful in convincing foundations that this is urgently needed work, but I think that will happen eventually. So, and people can volunteer. We need researchers mostly. That's mostly, you know, because as you can imagine, working in 50 different states, we need to do every time we look at the status of game commissions or state laws, it's a 50 state survey, which takes a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at your website the other day and you, in preparation for this show, and you had some statistics about all of the states, and it just made me think that you and your organization have done an enormous amount of research. And I thought your website was very excellent, actually, and I learned a lot by looking at it. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I think this work is so, so necessary, like you said. You know, there's like 50 states, so it's this huge bureaucracy, and you have to, each one is different, and so it's a lot of work to kind of untangle this giant mess, which, as you said earlier, is why a lot of people are focused on federal law. There's only one federal government. There aren't 50 of them, so at least not yet. We only have a minute left. Do you have any last thoughts, Kevin, quickly, or?
Well, I think that, campaigning is, you know, ostensibly about policy, but underlying the policy changes is we want to see a shift in attitudes towards nature. Right now, like I was describing before, so much of our wildlife policy reflects these values of domination. And we are not going to survive as a species if we continue with that mindset. We're going to saw off the branch that we're sitting on in the tree.
Those are good parting words and very true. I'd like to thank you so much, Kevin Bixby of the Southwest Environmental Center and the Wildlife for All campaign, for joining me today. Listeners, as we said earlier in the show, may recognize Kevin as a former host of Earth Matters. And if you've heard today's show, you know, and everything that he's working on, you understand why he was very busy and something had to give. And so he's no longer working on Earth Matters, unfortunately. Many thanks to Gila Members Community Radio Station Manager and Audio Engineer Marcus Hansen, and to the boards of the Gila Members Community Radio and Las Cruces Community Radio Stations for their dedication to having community radio on the air for all of us. Also, thanks to you, our listeners, for supporting the station and for tuning into this week's program. I'm Donna Stevens of the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. Please join us next week for another edition of Earth Matters on Gila Members Community Radio and Las Cruces Community Radio. If you missed the beginning of today's show, I was saying that, telling our listeners that Earth Matters took a little break for a few months during the summer and fall of 2021, but we will be back in 2022 with a new format. Please, people, remember to wear your mask and to socially distance for your own sake and for others. This is what community and community radio looks like.